Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
Good morning. Welcome to Racing Across America on this Sunday morning. I'm Seth Merrow. Thanks for joining us. Thanks also to our friends at Gulfstream Park for their sponsorship of this. Some of the other programming and events here at Capital OTB. Appreciate their support during the championship meet, which, as you can see, winds up in a couple of weeks on April 3rd. We will be there that weekend. Looking forward to it, to get back out on the road again. During pandemic time, our on-the-road trips were, I would say, limited would be an understatement for obvious reasons. But we haven't been down to Gulfstream the past couple of Florida Derbies. Usually make the trips up to Woodbine. We haven't been able to make those, but we're back on the road in a couple of weeks. Looking forward to it, getting down to Gulfstream Park for some live coverage of Florida Derby weekend. So it should be a lot of fun. Mark that on your calendar and tune in. We'll try to get some of the major players on and give you some thoughts and some flavor from Gulfstream Park in a couple of weeks from yesterday and Friday. So looking forward to it. I didn't realize it. Speaking of Florida, warm weather. I didn't realize it until I was driving in today, and they said it on the radio. You know, obviously it's that time of year, but I hadn't even thought about it. First day of spring. So happy spring. And what does that mean? It means hopefully the bad weather is mostly in the rearview mirror. There was a warm weather thunderstorm last night with plenty of lightning, so that kind of signaled weather-wise. Maybe I've turned the corner a little bit. Obviously, we all know living here in New York, though, upstate New York, April, even May, could potentially have a snowstorm, but we'll keep our fingers crossed that that's not the case. So spring has sprung, as it were, and again, with daylight savings last week, the time has shifted at some of the tracks. I was in last night racing across America through the end of the Aqueduct program, which was close to 6 o'clock, a little bit after 6, I think. And so post times have shifted for the opening of the cards, Gulfstream and Aqueduct and some of the other venues as well. So, you know, you have to kind of shift yourself as far as your day part to pay attention to. OTB Live, again, a little bit later now. We had been, you know, in the thick of winter kicking off at probably about noontime. Certainly by 12:30 we were underway. Now we're closer to, with the Naira pregame and sitting back and letting them play, we're closer to a 1 o'clock kickoff for OTB Live. And again, we'll be back in this afternoon with Sunday action. But as always on a Sunday morning, we like to do a little recap, some of the stakes action. There were some nice stakes yesterday, some horses that clearly will be worth watching going forward. Also on a Sunday morning, a little handicapping, maybe a little look at late pick four, late pick five at Oaklawn in our handicapping segment a little bit later on. And yesterday we had Naomi Tucker on to preview. Nice stakes day down at Laurel, five stakes. And I said it yesterday, the winter season down there is kind of fun. Every few weeks they have a nice big stakes day. Yesterday was another one of those. And the day after, we always like to reach out to Frank Vespi from theracingbiz.com. They do a great job of covering racing in the Mid-Atlantic region, including Maryland. And Frank was down at Laurel yesterday, so I thought we'd catch up with him, get some of his thoughts on that stakes action down at Laurel in the last portion of the program. So all of that coming up today on Racing Across America. And let's kick off with some stakes action and take a look at the stakes down at Gulfstream. We had Acacia Courtney on yesterday talking about those stakes. Three nice stakes. And again, as I say, these will be some horses worth watching going forward. The Any Limit was three-year-old sprinting fillies. And the three horses that looked logical all lightly raced and all had shown some real potential. And as I say, worth watching likely going forward. They ran 1-2-3. I had Spirit Wind on top. The betting public agreed, making that the 6-5 favorite. The Ralph Nix trainee is the number five horse, as you can see out here in the lead. Set some nice honest fractions, 21 and change, 44. Would that bring the horse back to the field? knew who is the answer to the question. We had looked at the replay to the previous race when we had a Kayshawn yesterday. It was a nice maiden breaker by 15 lengths. And now in the third career start, steps into Stakes Company and gets it done. That was a good-looking performance. So, again, horses to watch going forward. I haven't seen the numbers yet, and I'll keep, as the morning progresses, I'll keep trying to pull up the usual suspects that post buyer numbers. But given what we saw, the 85 in the last start, you'd have to think this is going to be a solid number with those fractions, early fractions anyway. And again, that was only the third career start, stakes debut, nice stakes win. So Spirit Wind will be a nice three-year-old filly to kind of watch going forward, you would have to think. And I want to say, if this was the race, yeah, Ralph Nix, I believe, said the Miss Preakness, Preakness weekend would maybe be something they would take a look at. And again, being lightly raced, I don't know whether these are defined as filly sprinters yet. You know, you get a three-year-old of either sex early in the year that's talented, you will tend to think, let's at least test the stretch out and see what we have. Finishing second was One Identity. Third was Strategic Bird. Those were the two logical contenders as well. Those also very lightly raced and also have some potential to be worth paying attention to as the year goes forward. But Spirit Wind, a nice, as I say, stakes debut in career start number three for Ralph Nix. Tyler Gaffleone was on board. In the ensuing stakes action down at Gulfstream, race number 10 was the Silks Run. Four-year-olds and up going a quick five on the grass. I like Chessmaster, the number five. That one made a little run that I thought, I'm in a good spot, but eventually could not sustain that. Yes, I Am Free is going to be the winner here. Chessmaster was coming off a triple-digit buyer. I went with the wrong last-out triple-digit buyer winner. Yes, I Am Free is the number nine. Belgrano 6, Arrest Me Red, the number three. Arrest Me Red was the favorite, but just makes a run a little bit too late. Belgrano ran well coming up the fence. It's just Yes, I Am Free kind of got the jump on the bunch. And at 6-1, one chart margin by a neck, three-quarters of a length between Belgrano and Arrest Me Red. And as I say, Chessmaster, my five at, I'm going to go off at 5-1, made a run around the turn. Looked to be in pretty good position, but disappointed a little bit. Disappointed me anyway, running sixth in the field of 10. As I say, Arrest Me Red, a Wesley Ward runner that hadn't been seen since last November, but had ended the season. Saratoga, Belmont, Aqueduct, three stakes races, three stakes wins. So it's logical. Wesley Ward, turf sprinter with some obvious talent coming in, working well. That one took the action. Decent little stakes debut. Again, made a nice late run. It was just a little too late as Yes, I Am Free got the jump and got it done in there in the Silks Run yesterday at Gulfstream. And wrapping up the Gulfstream stakes action, it was the Hutchison for the three-year-old sprinters. And this was interesting. And again, we talked with Acacia yesterday because of Nitrous Channel, who was going out for George Weaver, Randy Hill, Reeves and Company. So prominent owners. And they purchased this one at auction last year as a two-year-old and spent over $600,000. Horse lived up to it in the career debut going back to February 5th with a nice debut win and a solid 94 buyer. So in the second career start, steps into Stakes Company, and there was, you know, a lot of excitement, obviously, and buzz, and the horse went off at 1-2, so the betting public was buying into it. I said horse to beat on paper. I had the horse on top when I handicapped yesterday. I said, you never know. Do they back them up? You know, it's one race. Do they back that up or regress a little bit? And it was either Friday or Thursday. There was another horse just like this who had a huge debut and came in And that horse wound up, she's third or fourth maybe. So you just never know off the debut effort. Do you buy the number, the buyer figure? And you need another race to kind of validate things. Well, I won't say Nitrous Channel was a dud by any means, but winds up second to the horse that looked to be the one that you would want to use as the alternative. Provocateur was coming out of a second in a stakes race over at Tampa for Todd Pletcher. Provocateur, the number five horse. Nitrous Channel, the number four. And Nitrous Channel, for a few strides, looked to fight on and maybe have the shot to come back, but with much more experience, with already four starts under the belt in the stakes race, Provocateur proved to be best. And as I say, in the second start, that was no dud. It's a big S, come out of a maiden debut effort, step into stakes company. So the second place finish, and that Nitrous Channel showed a little fight at the top of the stretch. That was a decent little race. I think Nitrous Channel will be okay. Let's see where they go with that one next. Provocateur now. Fifth career start, second win. As I say, in the previous start, had run second in a little stake over at Tampa. So Provocateur, nice runner for Todd Pletcher. And again, we'll see where they go with both of those. The also-rans, I'm not too sure about, but Provocateur, Nitrous, the 1-2 finishers, I think have the potential to be players. If not in the three-year-old division overall, you would think in the three-year-old sprint division, which is kind of during the year a fun subdivision with plenty of opportunities, including a couple of nice stakes races up at Saratoga as well. Speaking of Saratoga and New York racing, let's shift our attention to the stake at Aqueduct yesterday, the Cicada. Three-year-old fillies sprinting. I like Munchin in here. Munchin was coming off of a debut win that looked pretty good for Ray Handel. It was up at Saratoga, though, so the question mark was off the layout. But these are the kind that sometimes I think, you know, obviously something went awry. You, with a horse with this kind of talent, you wouldn't sit on the sidelines this long otherwise. But sometimes also, if they get some time off like that, they come back, they're ready to roll, they come back improved, and you would have to think they had some confidence and felt the horse was going to come back okay in that they start in a stakes race. They certainly could have looked for, you know, a non-winners of one to get the horse rolling again. So I thought Munchin was interesting, and I put that one on top. The betting public agreed, made that one the 8-5 favorite. But Lady Scarlet, the number six horse, was right underneath for me and looked like the logical contender. Coming off a couple of races most recently down at Oaklawn, Mike Maker shipped that one up. And Lady Scarlet proves not just best, much the best in here. Munchin runs second. And again, like that race I talked about a few minutes ago at Gulfstream, I think the top two finishers, both interesting horses now on the three-year-old filly side. And maybe it's going to be the three-year-old sprint filly side, but I think they both ran all right. Again, Munchin, it was only the second career start, stepped into stakes company, long layoff, so that second was okay. But Lady Scarlet, now three wins in seven career starts with a couple of seconds. You got 6-1 there. And again, I had Munchin right over Lady Scarlet. Lady Scarlet was 3-1 on the morning line, so I think he got great value. You look down the PPs, and what kind of jumped out a little bit had to be the second start of the career. Debuted, last June at Churchill and ran second, then came up to Saratoga. And at this point, it was in the Brad Cox barn also, and ran second at Saratoga in a maiden special to Echo Zulu. So that kind of jumped out and, you know, showed some talent. Subsequently, in November, broke the maiden. Last time out down at Oaklawn and an optional claimer, won and won nicely. So this is a horse that had clearly shown some ability already. And as I say, I had it right underneath Munchin. So the 6-1 seemed generous. Again, it was a 3-1 morning line. I think second choice on the morning line. Co-second choice on the morning line. But the betting public was having none of it and let that one get away at a $14 mutual. So nice payoff on Lady Scarlet. Kendrick Carmouche on board again for Mike Maker. And as I say, I thought both of those, that one and Munchin, worth watching going forward, you would have to think. Over at Oaklawn yesterday, they had a couple of stakes races as well, and might have been the best performance of the day. The Whitmore, it was Whitmore Day down at Oaklawn. If you were watching the simulcast signal or if you looked on social media, it was a Whitmore Day t-shirt giveaway, pretty good looking black t-shirt. Whitmore was on track, led the post parade, I believe. Ron Maquette, his former trainer. How does it come? He doesn't race anymore, so I guess he'd be his former trainer, but Ron Maquette still takes care of Whitmore, I believe, but his wife was on board. And it was funny, I was watching the Oaklawn signal while I was in here yesterday, and they said to Ron something to the effect of, well, he's supposed to come out, he's supposed to lead the post parade, then he was going to stand in the winner's circle with the horse, and there was another thing he was required to do. And Whitmore is, I guess, known to be a little bit cantankerous. And so they said to Ron Maquette, what are the odds of him doing all three of those things? And Ron said, yeah, probably about 7-1 because he's got a mind of his own. What I saw of him, though, he looked pretty well-mannered yesterday. He was out on the track, and again, Ron Maquette's wife was on him. Big crowd turned out yesterday to show appreciation for Whitmore, who's a kind of a fan favorite down there, fan favorite overall. We had Ron on with us this past summer and saw a little Whitmore. We were at the Stakes Barn across the street from the paddock and did a little, on the road, as it were, interview with Ron and his wife. And then we got to see a little Whitmore himself for ourselves. The day we saw him, he was well-mannered. We were able to take some shots there. But anyway, Whitmore Day yesterday, and in honor of that, the stakes race named for Whitmore, the Grade 3, appropriately, a 6-furlong sprint. I had Bob's Edge on top. Bob's Edge was coming out a win in the King Cotton down at Oaklawn earlier in the meet. And Bob's Edge got it done, but this, as I say, may have been the best performance of the day. Bob's Edge is the number two horse. Betting public made Hollis the favorite. Hollis, the number nine, runs fourth in here. As I say, you can't even see Bob's Edge in the picture yet. When the chicklets came up, he was the last chicklet. There he is coming into the picture. Not just wins from last, he kind of runs away from them. As the second choice at 5-2, $7.60, pretty good price on a horse coming out of that win in the King Cotton. So now he's strung a couple of nice stakes wins together down at Oaklawn. So Bob's Edge on the male sprint side. We've talked about some of the three-year-old and the three-year-old filly sprinters in the other stakes races. But on the older male side, Bob's Edge could be intriguing going forward. Also, maybe just a little horse for a course kind of an angle. Although earlier in the career, he wasn't necessarily enamored with Oaklawn, but now clearly has become so. Overall, though, 3 wins, 3/3, and 6 starts at Oaklawn. So we will see when Bob's Edge, as the season progresses and Bob's Edge moves away, how he turns out. But it seems like maybe just now, as an older horse, is coming into himself a little bit. And my anticipation is he'll be a player on that sprint division. Larry Jones, trainee. Larry was pretty happy with the results yesterday, obviously, as he should be. Because, as they say, given that performance coming from the back of the pack, fairly late in the stretch. I mean, when we picked the race up, as I say, he was the last chicklet and just came like a freight train and got it done. It could have been the best performance of the afternoon overall, the various stakes races we looked at. One more stake from Oaklawn, and that was the Essex, which will lead into the Oaklawn Handicap a little bit later in the meet. And the winners said, yeah, we'll definitely be kind of thinking about that. I used Plainsman, the number 4. Plainsman went off as the second choice at 9-5. Warriors Charged for 10 Strike Racing, and Brad Cox went off as the 3-2 favorite. Warriors Charged, the number 3 horse. A little bit disappointing running 5th in the field of 7. Plainsman, my top pick, is the number 4, an okay 2nd in the field, but the winner, number 6, Rated R Superstar, making a nice move here at a generous 8-1. Upsets for the second time in the meet. He had won the 5th season back in the middle of January. Man, look at that win. This is a nine-year-old and wins the chart margin there, 2.25. Again, pays $18.60. Subsequent to the win in the fifth season at 25-1, I used the horse a little bit in the Razorback, and that one disappointed running fifth. Off of that, I couldn't pull a trigger yesterday. If you did, again, at $18 and change, you have a nice payoff on a horse that has now upsetted a couple of the big stakes down there at Oaklawn, you know, the fifth season, and now yesterday the Essex, and they are saying, you know, Oaklawn handicap, the horse is feeling pretty good right now. We'll give that a serious look. I was very surprised when I read the follow-ups. Danny Caldwell, the owner, Federico Villafranco. Danny Caldwell, his first graded stakes win, but what I was surprised about was Federico Villafranco. I enjoy watching and figuring his horses into the mix down at Oaklawn. It seems every season down at Oaklawn, the Villafranco horses are worth taking an extra look at, and this season, obviously, no exception. But I was really surprised to read it was Villafranco's first graded stakes win. So congratulations to those connections. David Cabrera on board. He's having a good meet down there also. But Villafranco, again, if you're not familiar with him, good trainer. The Oaklawn season, always worth paying attention to down there. But I looked it up on Equibase because I've been following him now for quite a while down at Oaklawn during the Oaklawn season, and thinking his horses are, as I say, worth when you're handicapping. Take a little extra look at the Villafranco horses. But he's been training since 2004. Now, he kind of stepped it up maybe in the last 10 years or so. Let me see if I still have that Equibase page up. Yeah, he had, you know, relatively few starts, 2004, and then starting about 2013, he really started to get a little more active. So, you know, it's been the better part of 10 years, and he's been a productive trainer. I'm looking at the chart showing his earnings, you know, and he's been over the $2 million mark for five of the last 8 years. So, again, it was a little bit surprising to read that this was his first graded stakes winner. But, as I say, congratulations to the team and the win with a Rated R Superstar, a nine-year-old who seems to be partaking of the fountain of youth down there at Hot Springs. We talked yesterday and promoted the mandatory pay in the Rainbow Six out at Santa Anita. I always like to kind of follow up. It was a tough sequence yesterday. I always say I love it when you can look at these mandatory pays and you see 1,200, 1,500, 2,000. That means it was spread out and it was playable and hittable. Yesterday's sequence was a little tougher. It did get spread out, though, in that there was well over $3 million in the pool. It paid $26,000. So there were plenty of winners, but it was a tough sequence, and it wasn't the kind of, like I say, I like it on these big days when somebody can jump in with a $40 ticket or a $60 ticket and walk away with $1,500, $2,000, $3,000 bucks. This wasn't that kind of a sequence. Started out in race number four, a $12 horse that was the third choice in a field of 12. So hittable, but, you know, you had to go a few deep in there, or a couple probably. The fifth race was the favorite at $6. But then in the sixth race, $14 horse that was the fourth choice of a field of 8. The seventh race, it was a $15 horse that was the fifth choice of a field of 9. That gets tough. The eighth race was only the second choice in a field of 7. But we talked yesterday, and I was kind of looking at the Jay Pribman column as well. That was the stakes race that had a horse that you may have thought was worth a single, and that horse went off at 4-5. So that eighth race, $8 horse, it was only the second choice, but you beat a favorite that I would think was probably a single on a pretty good chunk of tickets. And then the sequence wound up with a tough horse as well, $19 and change, fifth choice in a field of 11. So you had a fourth choice, a couple of fifth choices in there, and in fields that, you know, field sizes and whatnot. Your ticket probably was going to have to be a little bit expensive. Not everybody. I mean, some people may have sussed out a play or two in there. But, again, I'm happier when I can look and think, man, a lot of people. And the money gets spread around, and then you get a lot of people saying, hey, man, I played this weekend and walked away with $1,800 on a $40 ticket. That, to me, is more fun with these kind of plays. But that said, if you hit it yesterday, congratulations, because, again, it wasn't an insane sequence. That what's really bad is when they put these million-dollar pools together and it pays half a million. So, you know, five people walk away. This was a pretty good number of people, you would have to think, got it. So hopefully, as they say, somebody out there took some of that money from Southern California and brought it here to upstate New York. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, I'll do a little quick handicapping, maybe take a look later today at Oaklawn. A little bit later on, Frank Vespi from theracingbiz.com. We'll take a look, a little recap, some of the Laurel Stakes action from yesterday. All of that right after this. Stay tuned.
The best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat screen TVs, tournament style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you where's the best sports bar in the capital region, tell them Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the clubhouse racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku, try it now.
And yes, remind your friends, I keep saying that to people. If you know somebody who's up here during the Saratoga meet and enjoys Capital OTB TV, and then they go back to their home at a farther away location, remind them. We've been on the Roku app now for a better part of a year. And I hear from a fair amount of people who watch at a farther away location via Roku. So as I say, remind people that that is an option if you have friends who may enjoy watching us. All right, let's jump in and do just a little quick look at the late pick four at Oaklawn. And again, not putting a specific ticket together. I haven't seen scratches or whatnot. But we'll give you some ideas in the sequence. We'll have a closer look this afternoon during OTB Live. Late pick four at Oaklawn today kicks off in the sixth. Starter allowance, 8.5 furlongs. I have it 7, 2, 6, and 9. I'll put Roaming Union on top. Getting 4-1 on the morning line for the Norm Cassie runner, who comes in off a nice seasonal debut down at Oaklawn. That was off a layoff. So you'd have to think now strings a couple together. Hadn't been seen since Saratoga before that. Won and was claimed. And, you know, you don't like to see a claim and a horse come back off a layoff like that. Signals that something didn't go right. But the second place finish seems to indicate the horse came back in good form, should be primed to run well this afternoon. Roaming Union on top, second spot, Sign of the Cross. Nice win last time. Maybe against a little bit better. It's a Robertina Diodoro horse, automatically have to watch down there. And Kershaw in the third spot for Wayne Potts. Wayne Potts off the claim. Boy, that claim box, we talk about it. We had Rick Hammerly on a few weeks ago and talked about it with him. And whenever we have Nancy Holthus on, we talk about it. The claim box down there. When we had Hammerly on, he had the total, which was an incredible millions of dollars that had already been spent on claims in this Oaklawn season. But I bring it up because I read on Twitter yesterday or the day, I think it was yesterday, Gabby Gaudette, who's down there this season, obviously, with Norm Cassie being a trainer of the horse I have on top. But she tweeted out that in one of the races yesterday, and I'm not sure I have the number exactly, but I don't know if it makes a difference. She said it was a 35-way shake for one of the claims yesterday. 35 claims put in for a horse. That's incredible, the claiming game that goes on down there. But Kershaw claimed last time out of a nice win, moves into the Wayne Potts barn, I think fits nicely in here. The sixth at Oaklawn, 7-2, 6-9. Race number seven at Oaklawn. It is a maiden special event for fillies and mares, three-year-olds and up, going six. I have it 10-2, 7-11. 10 is a three-year-old, and again, this is early in the season. This may not be in some people's wheelhouse in these three-year-old and up races, but I thought Lac Vieux Désert, if I put a French spin on that, first-time starter by Candy Ride. Goes out for Robertina Diodoro. He's pretty good first out of the box. There are a couple of workouts underneath that seem to signal that this horse may be ready. Was purchased at a two-year-old sale last year. Worked 21 flat before that. This horse could be live first time out of the box. Devious, second-time starter, another three-year-old. And there are some four-year-olds in here. What do we have? One, two, three, four. So four of the field of 11, mostly three-year-olds, though. And the four-year-olds, for the most part, have had some opportunities and haven't gotten it done. So I'm looking for the fresh or fresher faces, and Devious is one of those. Buy Into Mischief for Ron Maquette. Didn't live up to that in debut, but showed some punch early before fading. I'm looking at that as maybe being a good building block to move forward from. So we'll put that one in the mix. And then I do have one of the experienced four-year-olds, Church Service, 14 tries, hasn't gotten it done, but certainly off the last seemed to fit with this group, and the, you know, experience does count. We'll see. In the seventh, I have a 10-2, 7-11. Race number eight at Oaklawn, and a calendar allowance race, $106,000 is the purse for an allowance event. I have an 8-2, 4-9. Devil's Tower on top goes out for Chris Hartman, who is having a really good meet. This horse has been a significant part of it, having won the last three starts at Oaklawn, all in starter allowance company, I think is going to fit well with this bunch. Name Rejected, I'm going to reject the last race. That was the first start off a claim, and it was a dud as the beaten favorite. So I will hope the barn has learned a little something, because the race two back was very good. It is the aforementioned Federico Villafranco and Danny Caldwell. So let's see if they're on a little bit of a roll after our rated superstar. And again, I'm hoping to get to the race two back. And if we do, the horse becomes tough in here. Strata Fortress in the third spot. And this one comes in off three nice improving efforts. Broke the maiden last time, but again, on those improving starts, I think is well suited to run well this afternoon in a little bit saltier competition. In the eighth, I have an 8-2, 4-9. Race number nine on Sunday afternoon, 6-1, 2-7 at Oaklawn. Top F Road Rules, who comes in off a maiden breaker last time. Again, one of those similar scenarios, just seemed to have taken a few starts to figure it out, but now has done so. Second spot, UVC. Nice maiden breaker two back, got a little experience at this level last time that I would think would be beneficial, and big success. 8-1, again, maiden breaker last time. Follow-up to the maiden breaker, they dropped in a stakes race. Now they're going back to the more proper conditional kind of a spot. In the ninth at Oaklawn, 6-1, 2-7. So again, there are some thoughts on that late pick four at Oaklawn today. And again, we'll have a closer look a little bit later on OTB Live in a couple hours or so. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we will be joined by Frank Vespi from theracingbiz.com. We'll recap some of that nice stakes action yesterday from Laurel right after this. Stay tuned. I'm Seth Merrill, and as serious horse players, we know that information is critical when placing a bet. With live streaming of more than 30 tracks, race replays, free past performances, and daily picks from professional handicappers,
No one gives you more up-to-the-minute information than Capital OTB. Combine that with the best player awards in New York State, and you have everything a serious horse player needs to be successful.
Win more with Capital OTB.
Winning starts here.
Clubhouse Racebook is the Capital Region's new home for racing and sports. 25,000 square feet of Vegas-style action with live wagering on the best horse racing from around the world. 260 flat-screen televisions and state-of-the-art wagering terminals. So don't miss out. The fun is only minutes away at 711 Central Avenue, Albany, just off exit 5 of I-90. And don't forget, if you can't make it to the clubhouse, you can always wager online 24/7 at CapitalOTB.com.
It's worth reiterating that graphic. Again, a lot of us, you know, a day at the track or at the OTB or whatever, you get home and you still have some tickets in your pocket and they turn out to be winners and they're sitting there on top of your bureau. Don't forget, you only have until March 31st to cash in those uncashed tickets from last year. And you don't want to not wind up with winning money that you made at the racetrack by letting those tickets go by the wayside. So keep that in mind. If you do have some tickets sitting around, you only have until the 31st to cash those. All right, as mentioned earlier, nice stakes day at Laurel yesterday. We talked in preview with Naomi Tucker yesterday, looking forward to the stakes races. But as usual, a day after some of those Laurel races, we reach out to our friend Frank Vespi from theracingbiz.com. Great website to keep up with all the racing action in the Mid-Atlantic region. Frank was at Laurel yesterday, so I thought we would recap some of the stakes. Frank, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Seth. Good to be with you.
And before we get to the races, you and I were talking during the commercial break, and I was asking about the racing biz and what's new and what we should hit on, and you mentioned you had a profile of some info on Dwayne Lucas, and that certainly is worth checking out because I've been saying it now, as have a lot of people. He's become the venerable Dwayne Lucas, but he's got a couple of horses that will play either or and or Oaks Derby, Secret Oath being one of them, Ethereal Road. And so folks can go to the website and learn a little more about Dwayne Lucas.
Yeah, it's really, it was an interesting profile. Nick Hahn did it. And, you know, I think Wayne is, he's kind of in a reflective place. He's 86 years old. He's, you know, aware that he doesn't have the stock he used to have. He's aware of, you know, he can hear the clock ticking, let's say. And so it's interesting to kind of catch up with him in this moment when it's, you know, not quite the frenzy it's been maybe in some years past. And as you said, he's got these two really good horses that may play a role here. He's certainly more inclined to aim the filly at the Preakness if she runs well in the Arkansas Derby and the Kentucky Oaks. He's more interested in putting her in the Preakness than he is in putting her in the Kentucky Derby. At least that's what he's telling us. And because he said he's kind of fearful. Fearful is probably too strong a word, but he feels like the 20 horse, the cavalry charge, the whole thing is a lot to ask of a filly. And he's a guy who's won the Derby with a filly and also lost it with a filly. So he kind of knows what he's talking about. So anyway, so he's talking about that. And he's talking about sort of life lessons from coaching basketball and how they transfer over to horse racing. And I thought it was really interesting stuff. It's really kind of an interesting look at where he is in his life and his mind right now.
And again, folks, you can find that at theracingbiz.com. And I was thinking about it the other day because I read also the owners thought, oh, Kentucky Oaks, and that's a nice prize. And I thought, okay, let's have two scenarios, and which is kind of the better scenario? You run in the Derby and wind up, let's say, second or third and think, boy, yet we could have won the Oaks yesterday with that performance. Or you win the Oaks and you think, gee, maybe we should have gone to the Derby. Well, one of them, you wind up with a trophy anyway. So to me, yeah, you go to the Oaks, and then you aim for the boys in the Preakness, which is a much pared-down group of three-year-old males. So that to me seems like a pretty good strategy, actually.
I think that's right. And, you know, he loves the Preakness. He's been very vocal over the years. He loves coming to Baltimore. He loves the atmosphere. He loves the Preakness. And you know, which isn't to say he doesn't love the Derby or want to win the Derby. But I think if you have the opportunity, you know, I think he's realistic, you know, that the Preakness is probably a better spot for his filly than the Derby will be. And as you say, you know, you can win the Kentucky Oaks. And if you run really well there, then as we saw with Rachel Alexandra, the Preakness looks like a pretty realistic spot to end up in. And as you say, you know, you're going to get several good horses, but you're not getting all of the horses out of the Kentucky Derby. You know, it's not going to be 20, and some of the top ones will fall away. So it's a much more realistic spot. And, you know, this filly she's very, very good. She hasn't yet proven herself to be that sort of quality. Those tests are still in front of her. So I think he's taking a pretty realistic approach. And you know, he's a guy who's known for taking big swings. So I think this is a more realistic approach. And it'll be fun to see how it shakes out. And I guess we're going to learn something about her next week or the week after in the Arkansas Derby. So that'll be fun to see. And I think we're going to know a lot more about next steps at that point.
Yeah, at the very least, he has a fun storyline to that Derby Oaks weekend to have, as they say, the venerable Dwayne Lucas coming in with some live contenders. All right, let's jump into the stakes action yesterday. I said it with Naomi. I've said it to you when we've had you in over the past couple of months. The Laurel program in the winter is so much fun. Every, you know, few weeks, there's one of these big stakes days, another one of those yesterday. Set the scene a little bit. What was the weather like and whatnot?
Well, it was, you know, it was a strange day because when the sun went away, it was cool. But when the sun was out, and the sun was mostly out, it was fairly warm, but it was really windy. So you saw some horses running really fast up the backstretch and then really slow in the stretch. So that, you know, probably a challenge for the figure makers to try and figure out what the wind was doing yesterday. But it was a nice day. And, you know, I bumped into a guy that goes to the track all the time, and he was saying, oh, it was kind of like old home week. You're starting to see people coming back and starting to see some old familiar faces out at the track and no masks anymore. And so that, so you can actually recognize people now and not just guess who they might be. And so it was nice. It was a good day. And I spent a lot of time just talking to people after stakes, and that was fun. You know, it's you're talking to a bunch of happy people, which is always fun, but also learning some things about some of these horses. So it was a good day. It was a good day at the track, I got
to
say.
And we'll hit on some of that. And it's always fun, to talk to you, who has talked to these people, because those stakes down at Laurel, a lot of them are won by veterans. It's families who have been in the business for a while. Maryland has such a great horse racing history, so there's often a lot of nice stories tied into some of these. But let's jump in the Conniver yesterday. And when I was talking with Naomi Tucker, I said yesterday I was going to be really intrigued to see if the morning line would hold up, because I thought Kiss the Girl may wind up being the favorite. I liked Kiss the Girl, but I thought Feed the Spree, with the 93 buyer in the last start, bettors these days do focus a lot on the buyers. So I wasn't shocked, but I was a little bit surprised. Feed the Spree did go off as the 3-5 favorite. Betting public nailed it. She'll be the number 3 horse here. Wins pretty easily. Kiss the Girl, just by a nose, winds up second, but a well-beaten second. This was a pretty good performance. Stringing a couple together, because the third in the Barbara Fritchie was nice too.
Yeah, you know, I kind of agreed with you. I was sort of inclined to take a stand against this filly a little. Well, actually, she's a mare. She's a 6-year-old mare. But against her a little bit because, you know, that 93 was a huge effort in the Fritchie. But the question was, you know, was she going to repeat that?
Yeah.
And the answer is yes. Yes, she did. That was a really good performance because the horses that run 2-3 there, Kiss the Girl and Artful Splatter, are both legitimate horses. They were 1-2 in the, I think it was the Geisha last month, whatever the stake was last month for fillies, you know, they were 1-2. So those are real horses. They're both multiple stakes winners. this filly, this mare, really just laid waste to them. And it's easy to forget she was a 10 claimer a couple of years ago, and now she's this.
Not only a 10 claimer, she was claimed. So a sweet claim. You always kind of like to see those. And yeah, that 93 last time was a little bit of an aberration. I'll be interested to see what she got. I haven't seen figures yet, but I'll be interested to see if she kind of paired them out, because it was a little bit of an aberration, but sometimes they just get good. She seems really good right now. So she'll be interesting to watch going forward, certainly.
And just jumping in quickly, so you were talking about the kind of old Maryland families in racing. This was Jerry Robb and his wife Gina. They've both been around for many, many years. They're both, not Jerry so much, but his, but Gina's from a longtime racing family. Jerry's been training for a million years. He had Little Bull John a million years ago. And they actually claimed this filly for 10,000 because she was bred the same, basically, as another filly they had owned years ago, well, a couple of years ago, Anna's Bandit, who made $800,000. And so they said, well, it's a great notion out of a no-armistice mare. Let's go ahead and grab her and see what happens. And this is what happened.
Yeah, and trainer Rob is also, and Naomi mentioned this yesterday, because she liked Fida Spree, and she said, you know, that may wind up being the favorite. And she pointed a lot of that, too. The trainer is hitting it, you know, a little bit under a coin flip at the meet. So you have to pay attention to that a little bit as well.
Absolutely.
The Not for Love, I had written at the top of my page, a very competitive event, but I will pat myself on the back that when I pulled up a replay for yesterday, I did pull up the race two back for Where She Told Me to Go, the Bender Memorial, which was a nice win, a horse for a course with Where She Told Me to Go. But I thought Jackson Traveler from West Point could be interesting. Air Token was another kind of horse for a course runner. Big Engine was coming off a nice big buyer figure up at Aqueduct for Rudy Rodriguez. So as I said, there were a few different interesting ways you could go. But again, Where She Told Me to Go did get it done. The number three horse here, 3-1 is the third choice. Yeah, the third choice in here. The favorite was Youngest of Five at 5-2. Disappointed a little bit running fourth, but a nice performance for the Brittany Russell trainee, Where She Told Me to Go.
Yeah, I was talking with Brittany yesterday after the race. This guy, he's an old veteran gelding. He knows what he's doing. He's a solid horse. He's earned almost $800,000 in his career, but in the last couple of years, he's really been kind of a fire fresh horse. You give him a couple months, you bring him back, he runs big. Next time, not so much. Time after that, not so much. Give him a little more time off, comes back and runs big. And I talked to her about that, and she said, you know, he's got his feet maybe are a little ouchy, so they're always kind of working on his feet. And she said, you know, maybe he's just gotten, you know, as he gets older, he's gotten smart. And he's like, I need this time, so give me this time, and then I'll run really well for you. And that's what he did yesterday. They did the exact same thing with him last year. They ran him the day after Christmas, gave him off until this race. He came back and won this race last year. Last year, they went to the race in a month, the name of which escapes me. And I asked Brittany, are you going to do that, or are you going to sit it out, maybe wait till May? And she said, well, we'll see what happens. But I wouldn't be surprised if he gets if he does not come back next month. I wouldn't be surprised if they give him till May and bring him back then and let him be a little bit fresher horse next time.
Yeah, and as you said, you're talking, I'm looking down, and it is an interesting series of past performances, because you see that little line in there that the Daily Racing Form now uses to indicate a break. And pretty much every line you see, he wins the next race. So he certainly does appreciate a layoff. Matticat, 10 Strike Racing, the Marshall Graham team there. And again, Brittany Russell trains Toledo on board. Let's move on to the Harrison Johnson Memorial yesterday. Galerio certainly looked very good in here, and I had pulled up the replay to talk yesterday. The Campbell, a nice winner of that with a triple-digit buyer. Mike Trombetta had Torch of Truth for Marie Trombetta that I thought could be interesting. Probably has to rebound from the performance in the Campbell. Gentleman Joe also. Number of race horses coming out of that John Campbell. Working on a Dream, I thought, was a little bit interesting as well. Didn't see it coming, though. Don't Mesa With Me, or Don't Mesa With Me, gets it done. at a generous 18-1, third longest price on the board. The number 7 horse ships in from Parks to upset the Johnson Memorial. Galerio did go off as the 3-5 favorite. Could do no better than third in here.
I didn't see this one coming at all.
Yeah,
I got to be honest.
Yeah.
This horse is okay, and he's run some pretty okay races. I caught up with the trainer, Flint Stites, afterwards, and he was saying, this horse is he's kind of particular. He kind of likes things. He doesn't need them his own way exactly, but he kind of likes things the way he likes things. And you could see he's a little quirky, in the lane. He switch leads back and forth a couple of times, but really good ride by Abner Adorno here. This horse was in front early. Whiskey and You, who's a long shot, was kind of going for the lead. So he let him settle back. He let Whiskey and You go. And then when he asked his horse to go, he did go. I thought this was a good ride. It's an interesting horse. He's been running in a lot of Parks runs a lot of these open allowances, no conditions, any horse can enter. And they come up really salty sometimes. And he's been running in a lot of those. And you're seeing some stakes horses in those. Those are tough spots. So obviously he was pretty well prepared for this. And Flint really thought he would like the one turn mile. It would be a spot where he could kind of find a good position, work out a good trip, and then run on nicely. He said, I didn't expect him to be where he was, but it worked out pretty well. So these horses are kind of, they are who they are. They're all going to be kind of bumping into each other in these kind of $100,000 stakes, open allowances, all these kind of races. You'll be seeing more of Galerio and Don't Mesa With Me and Torture Truth and kind of all these guys. You'll be seeing them the next time there's $100,000 stakes at between 7 furlongs and 9 furlongs.
Yeah, again, $38 and change. Tough to come up with the Park shipper. Particularly, again, Galerio looked awful good in there, but no better than third. Turn the page now to the Beyond the Wire. This is for the 3-year-old fillies going the one turn mile. This was a fun race. If you could get past Luna Bell, that was going to be the big question mark. And you had Carlos Martin shipping in Diamond Collector, and that's why I thought it was a fun race. That horse was interesting. Graham Motion had a runner in here. And so there were some alternatives, but it was a stretch to come up with an alternative given the form Luna Bell is in. A couple of nice wins most recently. Nice improving buyers in those past two wins. They were both stakes races at Laurel, and she validated that. Went off as the 1-5 favorite. Luna Bell is the number 7 horse in here. Candy Light, the Grand Motion runner, runs second. Diamond Collector, the New York shipper for Carlos Martin, winds up running fourth. But it was all Luna Bell.
This filly's a star. I think I said this on your show last month after she did something like this in a stakes race. What was interesting here, though, and the reason I say she's a star is, I don't know that these fields are all that great that she's beating, but she's beating them like a good horse. She has trouble, no problem. She overcomes it. She wins easy. She's got a rally from way back. Okay, she'll do that. You want her on the engine? Okay, she'll be on the engine. She'll do whatever you want, and she'll still run a big race. And in this race, in her last few races, she's been rallying from fairly well off the pace. This time, she's up front. I mean, she was part of a 3-horse vanguard in the opening quarter mile. I said to the jockey, Dennis Araujo, they had said we want her to be a little more forwardly placed. We want her a little more involved early. It's going farther. It's a mile. I said to him, was that the plan, to be on the engine like that? He said, not my plan. But apparently the filly had her own ideas. Luna Bell had her own ideas. She wanted to be involved early. And she was tons the best. I think he hit her with a stick once or twice, but basically hand rode her through the lane. And she was widening, and I think this is important from a handicapping perspective, and I don't know what the buyers are going to come back, and I don't know what the wind was doing. I can't remember what the wind was doing for this race versus the Don't Mesa With Me race, the Harrison Johnson. This 3-year-old filly ran the one-turn mile faster than the older boys did the race before.
Yeah, nice. Did they give you any sense from them? Because I'm looking at the PPs, they're all sprints. Now, this is an elongated sprint with the one-turn mile, but did you get any sense, talk to the connections, might they try 2 turns with her?
they have said every single time I've talked with them that she'll go farther.
Ah, okay.
So the next step is the Weber City Miss. That's a mile and a 60. I think this, assuming she continues her progression, I think she's on a collision course with the Black Eyed Susan. That's the logical thing to do. You stretch her out. If she goes two turns, and if she wins again the way she's been winning, I think you got to go to the Black Eyed Susan.
Yes, certainly has looked good in the past few starts. So Luna Bell, one we'll keep our eyes on. And again, when I talked to Naomi yesterday, I said part of the fun of these big stakes days in the winter down at Laurel are these three-year-old races, which maybe play into the Preakness, maybe not, but maybe play on the top level of the three-year-old scene, maybe not. But they're always salty kind of three-year-olds that will play in stakes company going forward one way or the other. I think that the private terms is no exception to that. Joe, for Mike Trombetta, came in on a three-race win streak, including two races back the Maryland Juvenile Championship. Local Motive came in off a nice win in the Miracle Wood last time. Eagle in Love ships in from New York for Rob Attris. Shake 'em Loose had a nice win last time and an optional claimer. So it was a nice field in here, and it does wind up to be Shake 'em Loose stepping it up and getting back into stakes company after the little confidence builder last time, the nice win in the optional claiming company. Joe, as the even money favorite, winds up second. And again, Shake 'em Loose is the number 8 horse. Joe's the number 7 horse. But a nice win here for Shake 'em Loose in the private terms.
Yeah. You know, this is another horse. And by the way, if you wonder if these horses are three-year-olds, watch the stretch run. You got horses kind of going left, going right, switching leads, doing all kinds of stuff. So they're still figuring this out a little bit. But this is a horse. Rudy Sanchez Salomon, who's the trainer and owner, claimed this horse for $16,000 out of his maiden win, immediately turned him around and put him in a stake and won the stake at 59-1. Now comes back a couple starts after that, wins this stake. So I said to him, you and I were talking about this before, I said to him, and almost a little sheepishly, but kind of like in the vein of like, sorry, I got to ask the question. I said, are you thinking about supplement? You know, now he's won a couple of these Maryland stakes. He wins going two turns. The next step is the Tessio, which is in mid-April at Laurel. And that's kind of the traditional local prep for the Preakness. I said, are you thinking about supplementing into the Triple Crown and trying to run in the Derby or run in the Preakness? And he surprised me. He and his assistant trainer were both there. They both smiled and they both said, yes, that's what they're planning to do. And Rudy said, you know, look, that's everybody's dream to run in the big races. It's my dream too. So we're going to do what we need to do to get there. So keep an eye on March 28th. That's the deadline to supplement for 6,000. Based on what he said, if this horse is still going good in a week, that's what they're going to do. So honestly, I don't know that any of these horses is that kind of quality, but as he saw with this horse jumped up from being a $16,000 maiden to a stakes winner in one start. Three-year-olds improved dramatically and suddenly and unexpectedly. So who knows?
Yeah, again, we haven't seen the numbers for that race yesterday, but given what he had fired before, you would have to think he would have to step it up to step into Triple Crown company. But, sure. Yeah, if you have a live horse and you're looking at paying a supplement of $6,000 and he's put a couple of stakes wins on the resume and an optional claimant, you know, the 6,000 isn't a big obstacle. And, yeah, you know, how many times do you get the chance to do that? At the very least, as a former claimer, a former claim, he would add a good storyline to Preakness weekend, perhaps.
No, for sure. And, you know, I'm never going to be critical of the local guy with mostly claiming stock who wants to take a big swing. Yeah. When something like this lands on his lap. He said, you never expect to get a horse like this, but you just take it day by day and see what happens. And so it'll be a fun story at the very least.
Yeah, and, you know, you think a little more about it. You have some horse like this. You wind up second or third in the Preakness. That's a victory.
Yeah, well, it would be tremendous. You hit the board. It would be a tremendous victory. I mean, this was a $16,000 horse who was 59-1 in the half stakes and won. Yeah. So, you know, why not?
So again, some fun races yesterday with some horses to watch going forward. As usual during, again, this winter season down at Laurel, always a lot of fun. And Frank, always like to check in with you to get the recap. Appreciate the thoughts. And again, I'll tell people to swing by theracingbiz.com to check out all the news coverage of the racing in the Mid-Atlantic region. But again, appreciate the visit. We'll talk again.
My pleasure, Seth. Thanks so much, and have a great day.
Appreciate it. Frank Vespi from theracingbiz.com. Again, a great place to check out all the news on racing in the Mid-Atlantic region. And again, as Frank touted, you can swing by and check out the profile of Wayne Lucas as well. The venerable Wayne Lucas, who is adding some nice excitement to the Derby and or Oaks Trail this year. All right, I'm going to wrap things up for this edition of Racing Across America, but I do want to thank our friends at Gulfstream Park for their sponsorship of this and some of the other programming and events here at Capital OTB, and remind you to tune in a couple of weekends here on OTB TV when we will be live from Gulfstream Park that Friday and Saturday of Florida Derby weekend. So we're looking forward to the trip. I'm going to go down a couple days early sit on the beach a little bit, work on the tan, so hopefully I have a little tan going by the time the end of the week rolls around. But looking forward to getting back down to Gulfstream and our coverage there. They're great to work with, and the TV crew that we work with down there, a lot of fun as well. So, yeah, April 1st and April 6th. This is no April Fool's joke. This is real. We'll be down at Florida Derby 1st and the 2nd with coverage of Florida Derby weekend. So mark that on your calendar. It is marked on mine. Again, happy spring. As I said, I drove down today and I didn't even think about it or realize it until I heard it on the radio. First day of spring. You have to love that. So we'll hopefully start spring out with some cash tickets a little bit later this afternoon. OTB Live, be back in about an hour and a half or so with OTB Live for a Sunday afternoon. So I'm Seth Merrill. As always, thanks for joining us. We'll see you in a bit.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.